Minnesota Reads on Northland Morning is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. This morning, we are thrilled to welcome not one, not two, but three authors this morning to our program. The book is called Untamed Mushrooms, From Field to Table. And not only can these folks forage mushrooms, they foraged a landline with extensions. We'd like to welcome Lisa Golden Schroeder this morning, Dennis Becker, and Michael Carnes. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning. And we have to admit, the third handset does not work.
No.
Yes. So we're going to, I'm sitting right next to Dennis, and if you ask a question about photography, he's your man, and I'll pass the line over to him.
Oh, golly. Well, yeah. So, Dennis, I'll get you on the phone later and just have a long conversation with you and pick your brain about photography, because I am such a photography enthusiast. This is a beautiful book. It's a beautifully photographed book, and the mushrooms are just exquisite. But I gotta tell you that the very first question that came to my mind before I even opened up the book is, when it comes to mushrooms, our phenologist Larry Weber talks a lot about different kinds of mushrooms. But the thing with mushrooms is, if you make a mistake, it's gonna be a bad mistake. So how do you ever get comfortable enough finding mushrooms in the wild where you actually do feel like, okay, I dare to, you know, I feel confident enough in the identification that I dare to eat this?
Well, really, when you begin the exploration, this book covers 13 species, and they're pretty well known as the 13 most common, most edible, most desired mushrooms. Now, there are certainly other species out there that would be desirable or interesting mushrooms to eat. But these that we cover, we tried to just look at a simple group that are pretty easily identified, and some of them are just unmistakable. Like, you really cannot confuse them with anything else. So it is very approachable, even to the absolute novice.
Well, and of course, the lovely part of this book is that the first half of it talks about identifying the mushrooms and shows you the different mushrooms and talks about identifying it. The second part of the book is all these fabulous, wonderful recipes. So if you are a chicken, you could just go to the store and say, I want this kind of mushroom, and then you could make the recipe.
Well, that's true to an extent. There are a lot of wild mushroom species that are being cultivated domestically, but not all of them. And so, you know, you might not be able to buy chicken of the woods or shaggy mane in the grocery store, but there are others that you can, and you can also substitute other mushrooms. So, you know, it's really up to how adventuresome the cook wants to be. And, you know, I do discuss, you know, what some of the substitution options are, but we really want you to get out in the woods.
Well, who knew? Now, chicken of the woods I had heard of, and then I discover that it can be abbreviated COW, so sometimes it's chicken, sometimes it's cow. Okay.
Yeah, so, that gets confusing.
And I got to know, does it taste like chicken?
It does. I've been really successful with tricking even youngsters into eating mushrooms that don't want to eat mushrooms.
Wow. That's kind of, and who knew, not that anybody would actually want to eat a real one, but who knew there was a mushroom called a hedgehog?
Right.
I've got a friend who actually does hedgehog rescue up here, and I would not want to eat one of the actual real little hedgehogs, but the mushrooms are, they're really cool looking, but you maybe can't really tell they're hedgehoggy until you turn them over.
Indeed. Yeah, that's one of the, there is another of those unmistakable mushrooms. Like, that is not something you can confuse.
Now, Maya was talking a little bit about oyster mushrooms. She said that her mom has them growing now. Her mom was the mushroom forager in their family, and she has them growing in her backyard now down in the cities. And I just have a little shout out to Dennis here. This huge photograph of oyster mushrooms is, I mean, I never would have thought I want to put a picture of a mushroom on the wall. But with kind of the way the light is sort of almost coming through the mushroom, these photographs are just exquisite, I got to tell you. And oyster mushrooms look like they would be fairly easy to find. Those, they look like they grow on the sides of a tree, is that right?
That is correct, yeah. They're a mushroom that grows, it's saprobic, so it's actually eating the lignans and cellulose in the tree. So it's actually growing from decaying wood matter.
The golden chanterelles in the book are all golden. They all do look golden. So does that mean that you can be fairly sure that if the mushroom you're looking at is not golden, that it's not a golden chanterelle? Or is there variation?
There are a few variations within species. So there's a species called Phasmatis. So it's Cantharellus phasmatis. And its stem, or the stalk, which in mushroom terminology is called a stipe, is white, but the cap is yellow. So that could be one that you would require a little more attention. Pay attention to that, because there are other mushrooms that are yellow or goldeny that can be confused that you would not want to confuse. So that's one that just requires a little more attention.
And a mushroom that now I am really intrigued by, and I would love to see one at some point up close and personal, preferably, I guess, in the wild, in its native habitat, is a pheasant back mushroom. I'd never heard of those before, and they are absolutely exquisite looking.
Yeah, they basically hearken their namesake. You know, they actually look like a feather pattern on the cap of the mushroom, and they are also a saprobic mushroom that grows on wood, and they're one of the ones that are fairly easy to identify without much confusion. There's not much out there that has the specific characteristics that pheasant back has.
Wow, they really, it is really a beautiful mushroom. Who would have thunk it? And again, these pictures are really exquisite. You could see somebody taking the book and saying, oh, okay, you know, and cutting out, just, you know, if the sort of person that doesn't respect books, you know, ripping out a page, cutting out the picture, and putting it up on the wall someplace. I could definitely see that happening. Talk just briefly. I was excited and interested to see that you actually included a good sized chunk on the ethics of foraging for mushrooms. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I think that any endeavor that, you know, takes us into the woods or the wilds of any area, we carry a great deal of responsibility in maintaining that and keeping that as, you know, natural and productive as possible for future generations. And it's, you know, mushrooms are a fruit. You know, you're actually only dealing with the fruit. You're not dealing with the organisms. You're not harming it by picking its fruit. It's similar to picking an apple off a tree or picking berries from a bush. And as long as we're respectful of the actual organism that's growing in the wood or growing in the soil, then it's a pastime that really doesn't have a lot of potential harm to the environment.
What about, are ethics involved? I know one of the things, mushrooms, good mushroom spots are kind of like good fishing spots. There's a lot of secrecy, and I'm not going to let anybody know where my favorite, you know, patch of morels is, for example, or fill in the blank. So, but is there a sense that, like anything else, that you need to be mindful of, you know, noodling over onto somebody's private property? And
well, private property, that's then you're opening up a whole other can of worms.
Get permission first, in other
words.
Indeed.
And, you know, I've been incredibly successful with asking permission.
Okay. And so that certainly works. Can you find mushrooms in our state national parks?
State parks in Minnesota, it's legal to gather and harvest. In national parks, it is really dependent upon the park, and so it's important to ask at the ranger station and find out what their specific requirements are. There are some parks that would require a day permit or a harvesting permit, and so you would have to just go through those steps in order to be able to legally gather. County parks here in Minnesota can be quite prickly. They're not nearly as open or understanding to such endeavors. So if you're in a county park in Minnesota, I would suggest being very cautious.
All right. And, you know, check first, of course, if you ask politely. Politeness is never misguided, but they could be, think hedgehog mushrooms, think prickly, think hedgehog mushrooms. Let's talk a little bit about these recipes now. What are some of, you know, many of us are familiar with the mushrooms that come in a can. Or the mushrooms that you can get in the grocery store, and there's a whole bunch of them under cellophane, and you take them home and chop them up and put them on pizza. Talk
right.
about the different flavor, about how mushrooms are flavored differently, and how perhaps their texture and their taste work differently in recipes than the kind of pizza mushrooms that we're used to thinking about.
Well, there's such a wide variety with, you know, wild species, but, you know, I think that the flavor that people love, you know, from mushrooms is that kind of really deep, meaty flavor that comes from the glutamates in mushrooms. And wild mushrooms do vary widely in terms of flavor, but they all kind of bring that kind of deep, meaty flavor to just about any recipe. The texture is very different in a lot of the species. For instance, the chicken of the woods has a much firmer texture, truly a more meaty texture versus a black trumpet mushroom, which is very delicate and actually has a little bit of a sweetness to it. And so each of the varieties really does bring kind of a different piece to the flavor palette of a recipe. And as I was developing recipes, or, you know, some good friends who are mushroom foragers, you know, shared recipes with me, they really choose the type of species that they're cooking with to really accent the dish. So often a mushroom might really truly be the center of the recipe, like my cow burgers, which I didn't know the chicken of the woods were sometimes referred to as, you know, a cow mushroom until Michael told me. I still am learning a lot about the species that, you know, we, you know, highlight in the book. But then there are lots of other recipes where the mushroom is just kind of an accent that just brings that extra depth of flavor. And, you know, it really depends on the recipe. I've got, you know, one of my favorite recipes in the book is actually a roasted corn soup that has a wild mushroom duxelle, or kind of a sautéed mixture, that is spooned on top of the soup. But then I have another favorite recipe that is a risotto made with sorghum grain with black trumpets with a roasted pork tenderloin. So the type of recipes is pretty diverse. But the one very important thing to remember with wild mushrooms is that they really do need to be cooked well and thoroughly. And, you know, or otherwise you may have a little bit of trouble with digesting them, which is a little bit different than domesticated button mushrooms, which often are sliced up and served raw in salads. You rarely do that with wild mushrooms. Probably the only exception would be the king boletes, or what are known as porcini mushrooms in Italy, are sometimes served very thinly sliced and dressed with a vinaigrette. But not as that happens more, I think, in Italy than here in the States. But all other species of wild mushrooms should be cooked well.
Now, when we talk about cooking well, once again, this brings me back to my intrinsic paranoia about, I mean, I love mushrooms. I'm nuts for mushrooms. But it just, like I say, it seems like if you make a mistake, you've got the potential of making a bad one. With a mushroom, now there are different meats, of course, that we know we've got to cook this well, because the thing that can make you sick, we have to make sure that it's cooked out of it. But this is not the same with mushrooms. The mushroom, the cooking of the mushroom is not, you can't take a poisonous mushroom and cook it well.
Right.
Just so I'm understanding clearly, the part about cooking it well is just to make sure that you can digest it without any issues.
Well, there's probably a little more to that. Michael, I'm going to let you take it away on this, because you can really dive into those specifics.
Okay. So there are multiple reasons why mushrooms can be adverse, or you can have an adverse reaction to eating them. Chicken of the woods, hen of the woods are polypores, and some people just have a specific allergy reaction to those polypores. Some people have allergic reactions to morels, even though a well-cooked morel is a perfectly reasonable thing. The problem with some of these mushrooms, such as morels, is they can contain a hydrazine, and a hydrazine is basically like a volatile chemical like rocket fuel. And that is a toxin that you cannot tolerate. Now, you can tolerate a little bit of it, just like you can, you know, become tolerant of other toxins a little bit at a time. But eventually, some of those can build up in your system and at some point make you extremely sick. But well cooking in edible mushrooms, what that does is it breaks down the actual fiber structure of the mushroom. Chitin is what mushrooms are made from, the almost like cellulose fiber that makes up the mushroom, because mushrooms are about 80% water. That other 20% is a very tough material. Chitin is also what crab shells or lobster shells are made from, so it's an extremely robust material, and cooking helps to break that down so that you can tolerate that in digestion.
Exactly. All right. So, well, obviously, you know, there's a difference, you know, there's obviously a difference in you're going to digest this better if you cook it well. And no, this is poison. Don't eat that. Don't be foolish. But again,
absolutely,
as you have laid out in the book, you've picked 13 common edible desirable mushrooms that a person can find if they have like access to insiders, because nobody tells where they get their mushrooms from, and some utterly fabulous recipes that you can try at home. You guys, I'd like to thank you so very much. And please, if Dennis was not able to hear my compliments for the photography in this book, it really is exquisite. It's a joy just to page through and to look at these beautiful mushrooms, and you feel like there are so many different photographs that you would definitely feel confident. Yep, I'm, you know, I chose the mushroom from a variety of angles in a variety of ways, and I think I could, if I found this, I'd be confident that I had it. A fascinating book, and thanks so much, all of you, for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Michael Carnes, Dennis Becker, and Lisa Golden Schroeder have created a book called Untamed Mushrooms, From Field to Table, A Midwestern Guide. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.